I'm speaking today with Renee Spears, who's the founder of Rose City Mortgage Specialists in Portland, Oregon. She founded the company 11 years ago, and it's one of the nation's first socially responsible mortgage brokers. And the way that she has it framed on the website is that they support community diversity, sustainability, and dogs. So I brought Renee on today to talk about how she built this business, especially in the financial services industry that has a strong social mission. And I believe that she's about to start working more closely with other companies to guide them in building up their social missions. The Rose City Mortgage Specialist was named one of the 100 best small companies to work for in Oregon, and it's also a top green business in the state, and it's won some accolades in the mortgage industry as well. So, Renee, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I'm excited.
So before I ask you to tell us how you started this and why you built it as you did, I just want to kind of tick off some of the different components of your social mission. So for every mortgage that you process and that closes, you and your team donate $100 of the $595 processing fee to one of several nonprofits that you work for, which is, you know, close to 20% each time. Your office buys as much organic, green, and recycled as possible. You recycle everything. You buy and support local vendors and businesses that are operating with social and moral integrity. And your employees set their own hours and receive pay that's higher than the industry standards. So those are just a few of the things that you've used to build the social mission. Now, I'd like to ask, why did you start a business, particularly in the financial services, which I think has a stigma about being more financially and bottom-line driven and a little more closed-minded? Why did you start a business with a social mission?
Well, I have worked in the mortgage industry for about 25 years and worked for the man for a number of those years, and actually just kind of got fed up with how I was treated, the places that I worked, and actually how much profit they were making off the normal person and not paying their employees that much, while, of course, management made all the money. So my intention, actually, when I first started the company, was really that I just didn't want to work for companies that I saw that weren't working well. So I decided that I would just stay, you know, work from home with my kids and my dogs out of my family room. And that's really how the company started, was just so that I could have a better life. So it kind of grew from there. After about the first year, I kept getting so many referrals that I had to start hiring people. And that's when I kind of made the conscious decision to grow the company. And it was actually easy to do that because I worked for so many companies that did the wrong thing. I just did the opposite of what they were doing, and it's turned out fine. So
did you really have instances when you said, okay, well, that certainly didn't work, so I'm just going to do the opposite and I'm not even going to overthink it?
Yeah, I didn't even overthink it. I thought, you know, I thought how many ridiculous things I did when I worked for them that just were wastes of money and time, and how really my number one thing was making sure that I enjoyed my life and that the employees that I had work for me enjoyed their lives too, that we had good balance and that everybody was treated fairly. So that was really like the motivating factors. I just wanted to have a great place to go to work every day. It was that simple.
And do you have an example you could share about the dichotomy between the old way and then how you implemented the opposite when you were growing your business?
Well, for instance, I used to years ago work on the 1-800 loan line. And so it was a call center, and we took loan calls from all around the nation. This is when I worked for another company. And nobody ever saw us, but we were required to wear nylons and dresses and suits and ties, of course, for the guys, to work every day, and nobody ever saw us. So it was just ridiculous to me to think to do that. We could have been more comfortable, you know, wearing jeans or sweats or whatever. So one of the things that I implemented here is people can wear whatever they want to work. People come in their pajamas, their yoga clothes. I hardly ever see anybody dress up unless they have a really super, you know, big appointment to go to or something like that where they want to look a little nicer. So.
And do you follow that yourself, or do you maintain a certain level of dress as the figurehead of the company?
You know, I've thought a lot about this, and I really, the main reason for starting my own company is that I could have a great life, and so I want to wear jeans, and there's been a couple times this past year where I wore my pajamas to work, and it makes everybody here feel a little bit more comfortable, too, if, you know, that they can just be themselves and wear what they want to work. So when I do go out and do presentations or something in the community, I will dress nicer because people are out there who seriously do not want to see me in my pajamas. But besides that, at work, I always wear whatever I want to.
So what were some of the first things that, now looking back on, or at least talking with me, and I could say, well, that's one element of your social mission. So you allowed your employees to wear whatever they want. What were some of the other earlier things that you set out to do? And then what were some of the more advanced things? Maybe took a little more resources or capital or just confidence?
Well, the easy things were really have to do with how the office was set up. So people can wear whatever they want to work. They can bring their dogs and their kids. They can work whatever hours that they want to. So that was another thing. I really disliked it, you know, having to be at work at a certain time. So everybody that works for me has flex time. And I think that really sets them up to have a better life, where if they have something they need to do with their kids in the morning, they can go do that. Or if they want to get in early and get work done so they can go skiing in the afternoon, they can do that. So this allows them to do that. So those were some of the simple things about just how we are in the office. And then what really, I think, started the more social part of it was I was one of my kids in middle school had a project, a science project that we had to do. So the whole family went and cleared ivy out of one of our local parks here. Ivy is an invasive in the Northwest, and we need to get it out of all of the areas. It's just taking over here. So we went and did that, and I had two boys in middle school, and they were, like, so proud that, you know, they went out this afternoon and volunteered. They, you know, kind of didn't have very much self-confidence, and this made them feel a lot better. So the next weekend, we did another volunteer project. We went out and planted trees with our local Friends of Trees neighborhood group. And I could see them again. They just were so proud. They called Grandma, and they were saying, "This is so great, Grandma. We planted trees. We're so proud." And it started as I realized that I had to be a role model for them, that there were no role models for our younger people on how to do things right and how to volunteer and give back. So at that time, every member of our family chose a nonprofit, and I decided to donate the $100 for each loan that we closed to a nonprofit. And the reason I did it like that instead of giving a certain set percentage of our net profit was I was just starting. And some months I only closed one deal, and other months I was closed six. So when I made more money, I donated more money. And it was really just has snowballed from there. So we still have the eight nonprofits that my family chose, but now we also allow our clients to write in a nonprofit that they would like the donation to go to, not just one of the eight that we've chosen.
And you were just able to do that by prioritizing that cost and maybe taking it out of some other things. I mean, it's a significant amount, and I understand that you can scale it based on what you're bringing in, but it was just that commitment and kind of taking the money out, and you were left to do less with, but that was, what I'm trying to say is, was it an easy choice? Did you feel like you were having to make sacrifices in your business because of that money that you are donating to the nonprofit?
No, it was just like a fixed cost, just like if I had to pay rent for the business. You know, you have to pay that each month or your taxes. And this was just another thing. I just made that commitment. It was important to me. Especially in the financial industry, we make so much money. And, you know, I think people don't like to talk about that, but there's enough money for me to make a good living, my employees to make a good living, and for us to give back. So,
and you say on the website that your company is an upstream company. Can you talk to us about what that means?
Well, yeah, we really, being an upstream company, really are aware of every decision we make, how that flows out down into the community. So we make every decision, and I know it sounds ridiculous, even down to the hand soap that we buy for the bathroom, on how that's affecting our community, our clients, our employees, and the world and environment. So we buy everything that we can locally. We buy everything organic, free trade from our local buyers. We don't have anything shipped. And we recycle everything that comes out of our office, which is, we live in a great place in Portland where we're able to do that. There's lots of places where we can take our stuff to be recycled. One of the things that we did a couple years ago is we took away everybody's garbage can. And that really forced us, because you have the stuff and you don't know what to do with it. So it forced us to even change what we were buying so we wouldn't be buying waste to begin with. And I was probably the biggest waste person there. I used to go across the street and buy a salad at the local deli every day, and they would put it in this plastic container, you know, and the container at that time couldn't be recycled. And I stopped buying those salads because here I was every day with a salad container that I couldn't throw away. And so it just made us really look at what we were purchasing and how we were getting rid of it. So that's a couple of small examples.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think that, well, one question I have is a logistical question, and it takes more time. Instead of going online and ordering your bulk supplies, including that hand soap from Staples or Office Depot or Target or something, now you have to be more aware of the fair trade and the organic and the local. Logistically, how did that work? Because it probably just seems natural, you know, maybe you divided it up, or I'm just trying to think, what I'm getting at in a very complicated way is that even these small things take more time, and how do we get other people to use the time to do that, to take the time to do that, where they could say, well, I really don't want to go to four different retailers to get these products or be aware. You know, I really feel like I could make a difference if I process more loans and give that $100 to these nonprofits.
And I understand that because it does, right when you start doing it, take more time because you don't know where to buy stuff and you don't know what products are the best. But after you get over that initial hump of the time investment, it's so much easier and cheaper. And we just keep a list of what we need, and we keep it in the kitchen. And then when people use the end of something or the last of something, they just write on the list what we need. And so it takes a little bit more planning to do that, just a little. But in the long run, it saves you a lot more time. Obviously, it's much better for the world and the environment, and your employees feel like they're helping. So they want to do it.
Money too. How have you found that it saved you money?
Well, because I'm not, for instance, in the bathroom, we used to have paper towels that you would recycle, you know, use and throw away. And now we've, in the past couple years, used hand towels that are cloth. And so we just switch those out every few days and wash them. So I haven't had to buy any new hand towels probably 2.5-3 years now because we've just been using them and washing them. It's much cheaper than, buying the stuff, the paper towels to replace it all the time.
So. Mm-hmm. What about your employees? Are you attracting, do you think, a different type of employee than you would otherwise?
Oh, absolutely. I have the best employees. I know everybody says that, but I really do have the best employees ever. And the kind of company we are weeds out the people that we don't really want to work with to begin with. So they see us, and if they're not recyclers or they don't want to support the community in their normal life at home, then they definitely don't want to work here. So that immediately weeds out people that probably aren't a good fit for us. So the employees that work here, everybody volunteers or has some sort of nonprofit that they support. About half the people that work here are actually on boards of nonprofits. And then we volunteer in the community at least once every 2 months. And this is actually our bonding time out there. So this weekend we're going to plant trees with Friends of Trees, which is funny that I talked about that earlier, that I did that 11 years ago. And then we also do the Cascade AIDS Walk every year. And we do these as group things with the employees here and our friends and our family. And it's just fun. It's fun, and we feel like we're supporting the community, and it's really great team building too. So everybody that works here, I think, really feels a sense of pride and that their jobs mean more than just coming and pushing papers and, you know, than going home. I think that they really take pride in what they're doing, and they love to come to work.
And that's because of, I mean, it seems that you obviously, you treat people with respect, and they see that on your site. That's very important to your customers and employees, but it's also that, the type of freedom that you allow them. And then I would think it's bonding together to say, shoot, we don't have these trash cans anymore. Now what do I do with this? And, you know, well, I really wanted that salad, but I see that you switched. What are you finding? I mean, it's kind of this added layer of a project or a challenge in a positive sense that can bring people together in a way that just normal work considerations wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. And we're all learning together. And so we have a company meeting once a month, and our green team then monthly reports on something that we're going to change in the office to make it a little bit greener. And so actually about a year ago, we ran out of green things to make it greener. So now what we do each month is educate people. And the last thing that we did was educating them about eating meat. And not telling them that it's right or wrong to eat meat or anything like that, but just the cost of the carbon that the consumption of that for that hamburger, that cheeseburger that you're eating, and what the environmental impact is that it is to the world for that cheeseburger. So just to educate them, to get them to think a little bit more. That now that doesn't mean that we're going to stop eating cheeseburgers, but you know we're just more aware. And you go home, maybe you cut out half the cheeseburgers you eat for that month, but you know every little bit helps. So we're realizing that we're all in this together.
Is the green team volunteers, and was was this started by them, or was it your idea?
Well, actually, it just kind of organically started. We would get together and say, oh, how could we make this better? And then we just decided, well, since we're doing this all the time, it would probably be more time effective if we just chose once a month to do it and sat down and did everything then versus doing it throughout the day or throughout the week. So, yeah, everything the employees do is all, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the word now. They're not forced to do anything. They all volunteer for all of their nonprofit work and any committees that they're on, or even this Saturday when we're planting trees, that's all volunteer.
What type of clients do you attract?
And this is the great thing. This is kind of we were talking about byproducts before, is I didn't go into this with the intention of thinking I'm going to attract certain clients. I just went into this thinking this is how I want my life to be and how I want to live. And the good part is we really have attracted loyal clients, clients that come to us because we do the right thing for the community and for the environment, and they're less likely to shop around. We have really super great prices, but occasionally there'll be a deal out there at a big bank that just beats us. And the clients tend to stick with us because we're local, we support their businesses, and they believe in how we do business. So it's been wonderful. Businesses, and I think that's one of the reasons why we were able to stay in business the last couple years, is because of the loyal clients that we have.
You know, I noticed when I was looking at your website before we spoke today that you have your team and your staff listed on your website, which, again, is a website for a mortgage company, before you have anything about products or prices or applications for customers for their mortgage loans. So I thought that was really an interesting ordering of it in terms of, I mean, I think some companies would feel that would be marginalizing, that would make the customer feel marginalized because they don't come and it's not front and center in the latest product and the latest rate. So what made you decide to position it that way, and are you even aware of that?
Yes, I am. I actually am aware of that, but thank you for noticing that because that was intentional. We know so much about our clients. We know, especially doing loans for them. And a lot of times they don't know anything about the person that they're doing loans with. So this is a big thing in people's lives. Buying a house is right up there with getting married, having a baby, as far as life events that you have. So we didn't want it to be another transaction for us. We wanted them to realize that we're in this with them and we're a partnership. So in order to do that, we needed them to know more information about us. it didn't seem like it was right if it was just a one-way street where we're taking their information and they don't know anything about us. And then a lot of times, too, clients will go on there and they'll read everybody's bios, and then they'll find somebody that clicks with them. This person likes to ride bikes, so do I. And so I think I'll use this client. So there's something in common right away with the customer that they can talk about that's deeper than just filling out a piece of paper or signing your name. And also, it makes my employees realize how much they're valued. I mean, I think companies are kidding themselves if they don't think that their employees are really the best part about their company. The most important part of the company are the employees.
I just read this quote from Andrew Carnegie yesterday, and it was, he said, to paraphrase, something like, take away my employees and I'll have a factory that will be dead in a couple of years. Take away my factory and my employees will build a more innovative one. And, you know, they were attributing that he was an early recognizer of the strength and the real asset of employees.
That's cool. I love that quote. I think that there is a big shift right now because of what has happened in the economy. I think maybe companies are starting to really get it. How important the employees are. So you can see that with these successful companies, especially, you know, Google and Zappos and, mm-hmm. you know, all those companies really value their employees.
No, absolutely. It's really interesting to watch, and it's so exciting. It feels so right and so good. I mean, those are just simple words, but that's how it feels. So how has it been as a woman business owner? Were you ever criticized for building a business that was seen as a little too soft? And again, I keep going back to, well, you're in the financial sector, and clearly I've never worked in the financial sector because I have this perception of it as being just very bottom line driven, et cetera. And you were saying some of you experienced some of that in your prior work, but I think sometimes businesses with a social mission are seen as a little soft, and then sometimes women-owned businesses are seen as a little soft. Did you experience any of those feelings while you were building Rose City Mortgage Specialist?
Oh, completely, especially the very first year or two. I had many, many men that I'd worked with in the industry said, you're never going to make it. Nobody's going to like that. You need to have your rates first, and nobody cares about your employees and, you know, all the things that we've been talking about today. But I felt so strongly that that's the kind of company that I wanted to have. And so what if I didn't make $3 million that year and they did? That's my quality of life at that time was so much better because I loved the people that I worked with and felt like I was doing the right thing. The funny part is now, though, you know, 11 years later, so many of them are out of business, and we're still going strong. So this is a sustainable company and a way that you do business sustainably. To keep it going and going and going is you have to treat people the right way. It's easy to come into any industry, I believe, and make a quick buck and be in and out in a couple years, but that's just not the way that I wanted to do business. But, yeah, I all the time heard from, especially men. Women loved it, but men tend to say that, you know, you're not going to stay in business. This is just a bad business model. And it's kind of funny now that I look back on it, though.
Do you have people who come to you or who are interested in how you created your social mission? Are most of them women? Are they men? Have you noticed a pattern, a gender pattern there?
You know, I would say now it's probably more 50-50. For a long time it was women. I talked to a lot of women. But now I've noticed in the last year or so it's really men too. And I think that they're, like I said, they're realizing that this is a great way to do business.
Renee?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, yep. Yeah. Okay. You're back. I lost you. You were saying that men and women, and now the men are realizing that it's a great way.
Yeah, that's a great way to do business, and it's much more profitable in the end. It's better than that quick buck.
So I was kind of going to save that question, but you set us up so nicely. What are the benefits that you've seen in running a business with a social mission? And I want to get into this a little more, but I know that you're starting to work with other businesses. And how do you convince them or talk to them about the benefits?
Well, you know, there's a couple different ways to approach this, and one of them is really the old-fashioned way that people that are used to doing business in a different way, really, a lot of times they really just care about the bottom line. So if we're talking just about the bottom line, hello?
Oh, I'm there still.
Okay, that was bizarre. Anyway, what they're really worried about is the bottom line. And if we're looking just at that, your employee turnover is just down to nothing. I've had the same 13 people that have worked for me for the past 3 years. And during this time in the mortgage industry, that's just unheard of to keep those same people. So employee turnover and then morale here, people produce so much more because they're happier and they come to work and they want to be here and they want to give their all. So productivity is up. And then I definitely attract the best employees just because this is some place that the employees like that want to work. I don't have to go for the bottom of the barrel, just any employee that I can. I can take and pick the top people that I want to work here. So that's kind of part of it from the bottom line, looking at the bottom line. And then the other part is people want something to believe in their lives. They want more than just you go to work and you get a paycheck. They want to believe that they're doing the right thing, that they're helping society, that they're helping the world be a better place. And so I think that that really motivates a lot of people to kind of make a switch to looking at how they live their lives, not just at home, but at work. We're trying to blur that line between home and work so that it's just living your life, not so much separation between home and work.
Right. And you're talking here about your employees.
Yes.
Home work. And for your customers, do you think that the way that you do business gives them something to believe in or a part of something to believe in?
I definitely do, because they can go anywhere with their money. But if they know that where their money is supporting are people that are in their community, they're supporting people's jobs, they're supporting other grocery stores and businesses in their own community, and also nonprofits that they want to support, that's easy. It's just like voting with your dollar, that you can decide then where you want your money to go. So I think that especially too, when we're using this as a role model for how their company can be set up, and then also how they can feel when they go to work. They can be happy, they can be fulfilled, all that. So
what type of companies do you work with, or entrepreneurs or organizations? I want to get a little more into your teaching and your evangelizing this type of business model.
Well, we work with what happened really is about 4 or 5 years ago, people got really interested in how we did business. So I did a lot of talks out in the community, and we were lucky enough to be the number one small business to work for in Oregon last year, which was kind of cool. So I did talks on that, too, throughout for just different organizations. And everybody just kind of wants to just get new ideas, and it's across the board. It's from printing companies to attorneys to factories, to other financial industries, too. So there's not, like, one particular company that seems to be more into this than any other. Being in Portland, this is, like, the perfect place that, you know, everybody here is really about a social mission, sustainability, all that. So I think I just happen to be in the right place at the right time, which is kind of cool. I love it when that works. So
what can entrepreneurs who are listening now learn from how you built your social mission?
What I think that they need to learn, or that they can maybe glean from this, is to follow your heart. Do what you think is right and make it a place where you want to work, where you want to get up every day and come to work, whether it's with your kids, your dogs, wearing whatever you want, you know, supporting whatever is important to you. There's a company called Laughing Planet that I eat lunch at regularly, and they are all about, their owners of that company are all about saving the gorillas. And so that's their mission, and everybody there is motivated toward that. And so it's really kind of cool to go in there. They have pictures of all the gorillas on the wall and the gorillas' stories. So it's kind of cool. So just following whatever it is that motivates you and that you really want to support in your life. if you do that, I don't see how you cannot be successful, because there's so much motivation that comes with that and passion. And that's the thing that gets you up on those days where you really don't want to go to work and do your best. You're always doing your best because you're motivated by that.
What about people who might say, but, yeah, if I run this business and it's just like, you know, it's more
like, hello?
Employees are, oh, I'm here.
Can you repeat employees that? Are, can you repeat that
sure.
part, please?
What about people who say, yeah, if I'm running a business but it's more relaxed and employees are given more freedom and I can come in my workout clothes, don't I lose respect? Don't I lose credibility in their eyes? What about that type of moving away from a traditional boss role or persona?
Well, I think that people respect you for your actions, and that's gone on forever. You can't force somebody to respect you just because they're your boss or you wear a suit and tie to work. They respect you because you live your life and run your life in a way that's respectable. So what you wear doesn't command respect, and I think that people want to be happy in their lives, and if they can go to a place where they are respected for who they are and what they bring to the table, then that respect is reciprocated.
Did you have mentors or role models throughout your time doing this? And if so, who are they?
You know, I haven't. It's kind of a bummer because I'm starting to run into a lot of older women kind of in their 60s and 70s that are role models for me. But during the time that I was kind of setting up the company, nobody was. I felt like I was just kind of doing this on my own. But I read a lot of books, and one of them I think that I really read that I enjoyed was called The Money Bible, of all the horrible names. But it was all these books from the early 1900s that successful people had written, and they were all about treating your employees well and manifesting money, and it was just really kind of cool to think that this isn't something new, that this has been around for a while. We've just lost it in our society for a few years. So I think we're finally past that point. Maybe we're going back to what we know works in business.
You know, that just reminds me, and that's something you said earlier, creating a workplace where you want to go, and that's what helps you get up on the days where it's raining and you really don't want to get up. Tony Hsieh, who now runs Zappos, started another company, and he said as it grew, they didn't really scale it right, and it just got to be this place that he dreaded going to work. And so that was a huge indicator of him when he moved over to Zappos about creating something that he enjoyed. And I think a lot of that stemmed from, personally, what worked for him.
Exactly.
As it did with you.
Yeah, exactly. And then you attract employees that works for them also.
Are there any other books or people that you've learned from recently? I always like to ask this question.
Oh, you know, recently it's been what we focused on recently in this company, and me in particular, is personal growth, and which is kind of another interesting point that I don't talk about a lot when I talk about the business, because this is now the new thing that people are going, oh my God, what are you doing that for? But it came to me that the better your employees are as people, the better they are as employees. So each company meeting, we spend about an hour on personal growth and, you know, just looking at your fears, dealing with abundance and that you're worthy and, you know, all that other stuff that we're all kind of working ourselves through. So I've really just been reading a lot of books on that. We did last year take a book, and it was called The Best Year of Your Life. Or The Best Year Ever, and I'm sorry that I don't have it with me right now to give you the correct title. But each month we kind of took a chapter of that book and went through it in our company meetings for the personal growth to see how we could be better people. And then throughout the month when people realize, I just realized something we were talking about in the company meeting and here it's come up again in my life, they'll email everybody in the company to share their experience. So once again, it's kind of like we're all in this together. We're all, you know, becoming better people together. So that's kind of where we are now.
That's really interesting. Do you lead these type of self-growth discussions or exercises yourself from the reading you've been doing, or do you bring someone in to do it?
No, I usually just do it myself. And it starts off with me kind of leading the main topic, and then everybody will kind of bring to the table what they think about the topic too. So it's me starting it, and then everybody else kind of pitching in.
And does this happen once a month or once a week?
It's once a month, yeah. We have a two-hour meeting once a month. About an hour of that is about business stuff, and then the other hour is really about the personal growth stuff.
That's really interesting. And that was just something that you came to from a personal interest. Did you read an article that said, hey, the next frontier of productivity and
No, I wish those articles were out there, yeah. No, I had started a couple of the meetings a couple years ago, and we did maybe 5 or 10 minutes of the personal growth stuff, you know, and everybody loved it. So I thought, well, gosh, you know, I'll try a little more. Maybe we'll do 20 minutes and a half an hour. And now about half the meeting is that kind of stuff. So I think it's what my people want and what is motivating them. The last meeting, actually, somebody said, Renee, we love it when you do these company meetings. You keep us so motivated. We walk out of here and we're just so happy and we're walking on air. And she goes, and then we have to wait a month to come back and get our next fix. So it was kind of cool.
Very neat. That's really interesting. And that just kind of reminds me of something else that I saw on your website, which was on the same page as credit hints, you have feng shui tips. And I just thought that was probably a fair representation of the balance that your office that is between many things.
Yes.
I thought that was really wonderful. Let's see. We're going to wind down soon, but can you talk about one or two of the greatest challenges you faced, and then I also want to hear some of the most pleasant surprises you've experienced.
Oh, goodness. The greatest challenges. I really have to say it's just been the economy in general. But at the same time, that's been the pleasant surprise because so much of our competition has gone out of business because they did business really in a way that wasn't sustainable. And so it's been a nice surprise not to have to worry about staying in business or going out of business and not to worry about losing my employees. So that's kind of been a nice byproduct of doing business like this. I haven't had that many challenges. Besides when I first started and people said, oh, you can't do this, and, you know, and I just did it anyway. But how did you deal with that?
I just wrote I spoke with an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur, and he's got this idea, and he's been doing some work on it, but he's worried that it's slightly different than your situation, but he's worried that if he has a social enterprise and makes a profit from it, that he's going to be criticized. And so it's this question of criticism from our peers, and his is more directed at criticism of his moral compass. And I wrote this blog post, and another entrepreneur wrote into me. He's got this really neat company, and he said that he's faced that. So yours was a little bit different. It was, I don't know if they were questioning your moral compass, but there was still this criticism of your business acumen. So how did you deal with that?
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest questions I get all the time, too. And I have to admit, the first couple years when we did the donating back to the community, I didn't even tell anybody about it because I didn't want it to be like, look what we're doing, so they gave us business. But then at some point, it kind of hit me, is we're really doing good things, and we can do more good things if we tell people what we're doing. So if 100,000 people know about me, then that's better and know that I donate back, and 50 of them want to use me, that's great. But if they don't know that I'm doing that, then those 50 people don't want to use me. So the better and the more successful we are, the more we can help change the world. And so that kind of then I just didn't really care. If I knew that I was changing the world and I was doing the best that I could and giving back the most that I could, then that's kind of what motivated me, not the negative people that were saying, oh, you can't do this, or you're slimy, or you're whatever, because I didn't see them out there doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard other businesses who say that they don't broadcast some of their initiatives because they don't want to be labeled as car washing or superficial in that element. But, you know, it's important if they're doing it with integrity, it's so important to share it because not only does it allow them, does it give them more resources to do more good, but it starts to build momentum and turn the tide for other businesses.
Exactly. And then other businesses can say, oh, they're doing it. We can do it too. Yeah.
Absolutely. So what now for your company?
It's kind of interesting. We don't have any big, huge plans of growing. We're very, very happy with the size we are and how everything is, and everybody has a happy life. What we are doing next month, though, is we're doing a pay-it-forward day. So we're going out in the community, and we're paying for the people's coffee behind us, or, you know, helping a woman babysit her kids for the day, or an old lady take her groceries to the car, and, you know. So we're doing the pay-it-forward day, and then we're asking all the businesses that we do it with to do a pay-it-forward day, too, just for their employees and the people that they work with. So what we're kind of hoping is we can get, you know, a few businesses in Portland all to do this on the same day. And you know how good it feels when somebody, you know, buys your coffee unexpectedly or pays for your parking unexpectedly. It just makes you feel so great. So we're kind of looking at it as not a way to get business or publicity, but just a fun thing that we can kind of lift the energy in Portland and maybe make it in like an annual event where we do it every year, or maybe we do it every quarter. I don't know. But we're all excited about doing that. And I've talked to a few other companies, just, you know, kind of telling them the idea of what we're doing next. And they said, oh, please let us know the day you're doing it because we would love to do it too. So it's already starting to gain momentum.
I think that's so true, is that once someone starts with an initiative, other people do want to do it. And I wanted to ask, was this your idea, or did an employee come to you with it?
Actually, this was my idea. I had taken my son across to the other side to Washington for his birthday, and we were coming back on a toll bridge, and the person in front of me paid our toll. And I was like, really, for a half an hour, I was so excited that somebody paid my toll. It was just a dollar, but it was just the idea of it. So, of course, we paid the toll for the person behind us, and I thought, this is so cool. So I talked to the employees about it and said, what do you think about doing this day? And one of them used to work at Starbucks and said, he said for an hour and a half one day, they had people buy the coffee for the person behind them. It just snowballed. One person bought it, and then for an hour and a half, the people continued to buy it for the person behind them. And they said they loved that day. They were so happy because everybody that came in was so happy and felt it was such a treat. So I thought, gosh, even if we just do that for, you know, 20 people in the community, how fun is that? That is so fun.
It is fun. It's amazing that something like that, just a slight direction of your money. I mean, that's what it really comes down to, the money. I mean, of course, it's more than that, but it's not like you're getting off the hook. It's not like you got a free coffee. I mean, in a sense, you did, and you also get the opportunity to pay for someone else, but it really is wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun.
And I'm wondering, as you've been doing these different programs and exploration, I think sometimes we don't know where to start. Entrepreneurs think, well, I should come up with this really creative program and a cool program to involve my employees, or, you know, get the community engaged. And it sometimes just becomes a little too mental. Do you think, I mean, so I'm thinking, listening from you, that we could have some takeaways of really just go with your heart. And two, it seems like the more that you do this, the more naturally these ideas come, and the more, the less thought out and structured they have to be.
Exactly. Like,
that's
so true. And I would just say, start with anything. Even if it's just picking up the garbage, you know, along the street in front of you or in your neighborhood, you know, start with something like that. And then you'll always have some sort of idea of something cool to do. It's not like the ideas, there aren't very many. There's thousands of ideas of cool things. But you don't want to sit down and come up and have to think, oh, I got to have this brainstorm, and I got to plan it all out, and I got to. That's too overwhelming. Just choose something that's easy and do it.
Right, and I would say also then, don't be so critical of the results. Just observe them, learn from them, and see how fun it was.
Exactly, and then if you decide to do it again, do it better next time. Yeah, learn from it. Good point.
Terrific to speak with you. Is there anything else you want to add?
Gosh, I don't think so. It's been fun. Thank you. I appreciate it.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.